Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. And we continue with our 2 hours with Trent Horn, in which only pro-choice people get to call. Only pro-choice people get to call. 888-318-7884 if you're a pro-choice person. If you're a little bit pro-choice, that's fine. If you're a lot pro-choice, that's fine. However you may fall, if you're a pro-choice person and you want to discuss it with us, to pro-life people, 888-318-7884 is the number. 888-318-7884. Trent, you feel ready?
I was born ready.
All right. You were not born pro-life, though, I bet. Well, I guess there's a certain natural.
We like being alive. I was definitely pro my life.
Yeah, probably.
Because anytime I thought there was a remote threat to my own life, I would dramatically protest it.
Yeah, yeah. I still do that.
As my own son, John Paul, does at home every day.
Yeah.
Which he seems to think that I'm the threat to that life, because when I hold him, he bursts into
Is he mad at you?
No, he's only mad at me when the novelty of dad has worn off and the return to mom and sustenance would be appreciated.
Yeah, yeah.
They're like, this is fun, right. but you can't keep me alive.
No.
It's kind of interesting. It might be like, you know, if we're out walking on the edge of a high building, we might be like, wow, look at this view. Yeah, I might die if I stay out here. I'm going to go back where it's safe. I think that's how babies feel about moms
about
and dads.
Dad.
Newborns, at least. Yeah. Newborns, until they can get away a bit. But otherwise, mom is like, wow, this is the one person that keeps me alive. You know, this is my oxygen tank. They act like it's a limb, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, you got to get back to home base.
But it's great.
Got to get back to home base. Yeah. I've checked out the rest of the world for a little while. Dad carried me around for a bit, but I got to get back to home base. 888-318-7884, the number. How old is John Paul? John Paul, your third son, is now...
About 2 months. Today, actually, he's going to be 2 months old.
Uh-huh.
Soon, very soon, he'll just be 2 months old. Unbelievable.
Is he doing anything really good? Like, are you like, man, this kid's clearly got special talents. Like, is he doing kung fu or is he?
He's doing poo-poo. He's quite proficient at that.
All right. Okay. This is family radio.
Do we have to censor that?
We have to take that out now.
We have to go back and censor the show.
Oh, man. David in Cleveland, Ohio, watching on YouTube Live. You are first this hour. David, we're delighted that you would call and tell us why, but why are you pro-choice?
I wouldn't say I'm pro-choice. I think for the most part, I'm pro-life, except for rare circumstances, like when the mental health of the mother is in danger. And I know, for the most part, most pro-life people are for when the mother's health is in danger, but when the mental health is in danger, I know that many of them would not allow abortion in that case,
Yeah, so what do you mean by mental health is in danger? So what would happen if a woman who has a mental health issue were not allowed to obtain an abortion? What do you see as the negative thing here if it's a mental health problem?
Meaning that if she has a mental, meaning that not just normal mental health case, in the case where if she doesn't get it, she'll commit suicide or harm herself very badly.
Mm. I see. Well, here's the problem that I have with that justification for abortion, David. I believe it is wrong, and this is what the church teaches, it's wrong to directly kill an innocent person, even in order to save the life of another person. So, I promised last hour I was not going to kill Cy, and I believe I've kept my word. I locked you in a serial killer's trap, Cy, but I left you a way out. You didn't die in the example last hour. So I didn't kill you.
No, I didn't enjoy that.
No, but you didn't. I didn't kill
but
you.
But I'm still alive.
You're still alive, okay. And I will not do that here.
Right.
So, for example, if Bob needs a new heart and Fred has the match for a heart transplant, Bob can't kill Fred to get a new heart. That would be wrong. It would be murder, even if Bob's going to die otherwise. Now, in the case of someone, a woman, let's say any person who will say, I need to kill this person or else I'm going to end my own life. I'm going to kill myself. I think for most born people, we would not tolerate that, whoever it may be. So let's say there is a rape victim who says she's so emotionally traumatized by the rape that she has endured. She says, if you don't execute this rapist, I will kill myself. We would feel compassion for this person and get them help. But even with someone as vile as a rapist, we wouldn't kill them because their victim threatens suicide if they continue to live. Another example, a similar example might be an abusive parent who says, if you take my children away from me, I'm going to kill myself. We would get that person help, but we wouldn't let them continue to hurt these children because they've threatened to harm themselves in the process. So I would say, David, that if we don't allow the exploitation or harming of born people because mentally ill individuals threaten to harm themselves, we shouldn't allow the same for the unborn. So that'd be how I would reply to that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, of course, it makes sense. I agree with that, but the problem is I'm Jewish, and my religion, I think there's like a law that you have to abort if the mental, because I remember a close relative, the rabbi, she did not want to get an abortion, but the rabbi said she should get the abortion because if she didn't, her mental health would deteriorate very bad. For the most part, Jews, at least Orthodox Jews, are pro-life, except for that case. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So that's my worry. How am I supposed to say to like my Jewish friends, right, like, or a Jewish rabbi, when it goes against their religion? Because I don't want to go. You know what I'm saying? I hope I'm.
No, I understand that, but then you might need to question that. So are you an Orthodox Jew?
Yeah.
Okay. So shalom. Very good. Half my family is Jewish on my father's side. Actually, if my grandfather hadn't changed it, if he hadn't changed his name after the war, I would have been Trent Hornstein. I told my dad if I ever became a lawyer, I'd go back to my grandfather's name. Just I do it for credibility.
You feel like that's a more lawyerly name, Hornstein, more than Horn?
Absolutely, it is.
Really?
He changed it after the war because he got beat up for being a Jew.
I'm sorry to hear that. Yeah, I don't doubt it one bit, but no. I'm sorry to hear that.
So I would say, David, that if you're understanding the ethics of the issue of abortion, and that's common, many Orthodox Jews are opposed to abortion, except if a woman's life is in danger, her health, mental health, if there's a case of fetal deformity. One common fetal deformity where they recommend abortion would be Tay-Sachs disease, which is more prevalent among Orthodox Jews than in the larger population. But I would say that if every human being is equally valuable, then we ought to treat them with that dignity and respect. And so I would just disagree with some of the tenets of Orthodox Judaism when it comes to applying them to abortion. And I would say especially there, the Bible does not have either in the Tanakh, it does not have any of these kinds of distinctions. It just shows a value for all human life in general. That is probably more of an interpretation the rabbis have developed over many centuries, and it's something that I would question. If you want another Orthodox perspective that's much more opposed to abortion, Ben Shapiro, for example, is an Orthodox Jew who I think would, his position on abortion probably be very similar to the Catholic position that would say it's wrong except if a woman's life is in danger. So I would just say there, I would encourage you to study the issue. And just really, I would say that if we allow abortion just because to alleviate suffering, if we allow it because, well, we want to alleviate a particular kind of suffering, like mental anguish, then that kind of opens the door for any kind of suffering, economic suffering, social suffering, suffering in a relationship. And that's not necessarily something we want to go. Even many Orthodox Jews don't want to go there. So what I'd like to do is send you, we're about to come up on our break here soon, David, just if you give your email address to our call screener, I'll send you my book, Persuasive Pro-Life, and my book, Why We're Catholic, and you may find them to be interesting reads. Would that be helpful for you?
Yeah, and sure, and just don't want to make it twisted. I think even for Tay-Sachs, most rabbis would hold that you shouldn't get an abortion. I think
really?
Even Reb Moshe Feinstein holds. I think in just this case is where, I think even Ben Shapiro is, they're very, you know what I mean?
Okay, I didn't know. I had heard before that because it was more prevalent in the Jewish community that there was a justification for fetal deformity. But if I'm not correct about that, or at least not correct anymore, I'd be happy to investigate that. So thank you for pointing that out to me. And then, yeah, we'll send you a copy of the books. And
just hold on, David.
Hold on and get us your email.
Our number 888-318-7884. If you're pro-choice, this is your opportunity. You're welcome to give a call. 888-318-7884. Before I send you off to the break, I do want to let you know they've got a new thing here. I'm pretty sure Carrie came up with it. He comes up with all of these. MP3 Monday. That's right. It's MP3 Monday. I'm just reading what Carrie wrote, so please enjoy the following reading. Visit shop.catholic.com today, where all of our MP3s are on sale. Nothing more than $5, more than 140 audio titles to choose from. And that's on top of our ongoing sale, where everything is on sale, 15 to 25% off and more. Ebooks, CDs, DVDs, books, even our School of Apologetics. Plus, we've got $5 flat rate shipping if you live within the continental United States. You pretty much have to go visit shop.catholic.com, get the deal on the MP3s for MP3 Monday, and check out all the other deals where everything's on sale. Shop.catholic.com.
There's only one Catholic Answers Live.
The Aquinas Writing Advantage Program is part of Homeschool Connections' set of online courses for your Catholic homeschool. Homeschool Connections' website is homeschoolconnections.com.
We need to pray because God says to pray. We don't need to pray to change God's mind. We pray because that is our big connection to the Almighty. Do we need it? Like we need air? Like we need water? Yep. Because if, in fact, God is the ultimate reality, more reality than air and water, then we do need to pray as much as we need to breathe.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett. Your host, Trent Horn, is our guest. Trent is the author of Persuasive Pro-Life. We are both pro-life people. I think everyone in the booth is, too. Show of hands. Nick, yes. Okay. Nick, Thomas, yes. Thomas doesn't know what we're voting on. He's just looking, going, I guess so. I don't know. Marie's working, so I can't ask her, and I can't see Mary back there, but I'm going to guess Mary's pro-life. But if you're pro-choice, we want to talk with you. 888-318-7884. Nick, you're the only one who raised your hand with conviction. I think this might be because no one else can hear me right now in there, but I just want you to know. I appreciate that you raised your hand with conviction to be pro. Oh, Marie gave me the thumbs up. She has no idea what we're talking about, I think. Let's go to Jonathan in Sydney, Australia, watching on YouTube live. Let's see. Hang on, Jonathan. Let me click the right button here. Jonathan in Sydney, Australia, why are you pro-choice?
Hello.
Hello, Jonathan.
Hi.
Hi. I'm not necessarily calling to provide a pro-choice argument, but I just want to question how consistent pro-lifers are being with their views on like animal ethics and factory farming.
I'm having trouble hearing.
Can you
a little bit louder? We're just having a little trouble hearing you all the way from Australia. So you think we're inconsistent with what?
Can you hear me now?
Yes, yeah. Better.
Like factory farming, and I'm just wondering if you currently like restrict which animal products you do and don't eat.
Oh, I see. Okay, sure. So because we had a caller earlier talk about the treatment of animals,
right,
as related to the pro-life issue.
Yeah.
All right. So all right, Jonathan, thank you.
Mm. Yeah. So first, it's an interesting question, but I will say at the outset, it doesn't have a bearing on the morality of abortion. Even if I were completely inconsistent, and let's say there were an inconsistency with this particular issue, with factory farm, with being in favor of factory farming and being opposed to abortion, even if I were inconsistent, that would in no way invalidate the argument I make against abortion, which is if there were an inconsistency, because people can be inconsistent and be right. So first, even if there were an inconsistency, there wouldn't be a problem. For example, the suffragettes, the very first suffragettes, believe that you ought not discriminate against people because of irrelevant biological traits. So that's why in the United States, they campaigned for the right to vote for women, that the biological trait of womanhood should not change that. There was a rift, though, between the white suffragettes and African-American suffragettes, because the white suffragettes did not believe blacks should have the right to vote. So they were being inconsistent there. But that didn't mean they were wrong about women being allowed to vote, even though they were inconsistent and should have said that race should be irrelevant when it comes to voting rights just as much as sex is. So that would be one. Even if I were inconsistent, it wouldn't go against my argument. Speaking of which, that goes to point number two. My argument is that it is wrong to directly kill innocent human beings. Abortion directly kills innocent human beings, therefore abortion is wrong. So that is my argument against abortion. I would say that on the face of it, that is not inconsistent when it comes to factory farming of animals, because we're not dealing with human beings here. There'd be an inconsistency if I were in favor of directly killing certain kinds of born people. That could be an inconsistent issue. But on the face of it, there's no inconsistency, because my argument is just it is wrong to directly kill innocent human beings. Now, how we treat other beings, that is open for discussion. And the previous caller, when I mentioned about animal welfare, I just said we ought not kill non-human animals. We should not inflict pain upon them without a good reason. And so I believe it is debatable whether the goods that are produced by factory farms justifies the pain that is inflicted upon animals there. I believe in some cases it does, especially if the alternative involves the starvation of human beings. I think in other cases it may not, that it's extremely torturous. It's going to depend on the particular setup involved. But I don't think there's an inconsistency, because my argument against abortion is a principled one about directly killing innocent human beings. So Jonathan, what do you think of that as a start?
Right. So yeah, the first part, I agree with you that even if it was inconsistent, it wouldn't mean that you're wrong.
Sure.
So after your debate with Alex O'Connor, I've actually become a fan of your Council of Trent. So I've pretty much been persuaded by your abortion arguments.
Ah, very good. I love that debate with Alex. He's a wonderful individual.
But Jonathan, it seemed from the tenor of your question that you might be personally opposed to factory farming. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Yeah. I'm sympathetic to that point of view.
Certainly. And Jonathan, I haven't reached a complete conclusion on the matter, because unlike abortion, the killing of animals can occur in a wide variety of contexts. And to me, the killing of animals, its wrongness would be the particular method that is used, not that the animal is killed. I don't believe that it is wrong to kill animals, because for example, the alternative for killing many animals would be that they would die of old age, and they would languish, and they would experience more pain languishing in old age than if they were to be killed quickly through some type of relatively humane slaughterhouse enterprise where they're killed quickly and their suffering is reduced to a minimum. But as I said, there's a difference between a local farm, operation that kills an animal and does it in a way and is meticulous and can make it limit the suffering as much as possible, versus a larger factory farm that is not trying to minimize suffering as much, but is trying to maximize output, for example. And there, I definitely could see immorality that's involved. But I think we also have to balance the other issue, which is that in many cases, this is what is necessary to provide enough food to sustain many human beings, that if they were shut down, would that be okay given the evils of starvation that might follow? So to me, there's more issues that come into play there.
But when you say, like, there's many times an inhuman workplace is the consequence of the employer trying to maximize profits, and so they make the place inhuman to work. And that's also the case in cruel farming. That's often
right.
It's the farming conglomerate that's just trying to maximize profits. It's
right.
You could do it otherwise. You just make less coin.
And that's why we would have laws preventing animal cruelty. And there can be debate about what methods of raising animals to eat them or to kill them, to turn them into consumable food products, what's ethical and what's not. And I think that's a conversation worth having. And I'll say, Jonathan, that Catholics, there's a divergence of opinion. The Catholic Church teaches one ought not be cruel to animals. The Church does not have a definitive position on whether certain kinds of factory farming is cruel or not. And it's up to individuals to decide. I lean towards a certain direction, but I don't have a solidified view on the issue. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but my question is, with that is, you're saying that you don't have a solidified opinion, but do you still consume those products? Because if someone were to say,
I do.
I'm not totally convinced that abortion is wrong, mm-hmm. but until I make up my mind, I'm just going to keep on getting abortions.
Mm-hmm. Ah, that's a what an interesting point. Yeah.
Right. So to err on that. Well, first, I would say those are different examples. One would be choosing to have an abortion is engaging. If I don't, in that case, if someone wasn't sure about the morality of abortion, they're not sure if this kills a human being or not. If they refrain, that human being's life will be saved. It's like if you're in the woods and you think that might be a human being out there that you're shooting at, not a deer. You ought to refrain from shooting to save that person's life. But in the meat-eating example, Jonathan, I don't think it's the same, because it's not like I'm refraining from an act and preventing killing from happening. Rather, it'd be I'm not cooperating with an evil that already occurred. Like, the animal was already killed. The question is, what will be done with the remains that have been present? It would be kind of like how, even as a pro-lifer, I tolerate life-saving vaccines that are developed from, for example, part of rubella from the MMR vaccine was developed from research done on an aborted fetus back in the 1960s. So while I believe the act of evil involved in that abortion was wrong, the knowledge and goods that were gained from it create so much good, and the evil is no longer perpetuated, I can tolerate using the goods benefited from that to help people, as long as we seek to not replicate the evils that were originally done. So I think there's a distance there in the cooperation with the evil that's present. So I'm definitely thankful you're calling in. We probably have to get to a few more callers here, but I hope that you will call back and you'll keep listening to the podcast.
And I know he's also super happy that you like his podcast, Trent Horn. Well, you can go to trenthornpodcast.com to find it, but it's called The Council of Trent. I know that, Jonathan. I could see it on his face. He was super happy when you said that. Kleber is next in Virginia watching on YouTube. Why are you pro-choice?
thank you guys for having me. It's a kind of a multi... Oh, well, thanks for having me. And then Trent Horn is kind of cool to be talking to you. I've just started watching for the past like 3 years.
Well, thanks.
Enjoyed your debate with James White. That was really, I like that.
That was a lot of fun.
Yeah. So for me, the way I approach it, when I was a Christian, the way I approached it was, in my view, in my opinion, I would classify abortion as the killing of a infant or a child that is still in the womb of a woman. Mm-hmm. So when I looked at the Old Testament, that act certainly happened. So I look at it like, okay, if that act itself that we look at as abortion that happens, all we literally do is switch the authority from one person saying it's okay to I'm saying that as a woman, you have the authority to choose what happens to your body. That's how I.
Right. What are you referring to something specifically in the Old Testament when it came to the death of unborn children or born children?
If I could say a case specifically, I can't tell you the book off the top of my head, but I remember there was a case scenario where if you suspected your wife of committing adultery, you bring it to the high priest. The high priest is supposed to give her some kind of concoction, and if she drinks it and the baby dies, that was supposed to be some kind of
It was proof that she was an adulteress.
It's the adultery trial. This is okay. Let me take a few points here. First, what your reference? First, I'll go back a little bit. Number one, even if God commanded the death of unborn children, for example, even if God brought about the deaths of an unborn child or a born child, Scripture is replete with examples of God either allowing children to die or people to die, or God directly intervening and causing their death. I would say that because God is the author of human life, he has the right to decide how much life we receive. He gave us life in the sense of existence itself, so he is within his rights to decide how much of that gift we receive. We do not have that same authority. So we don't have that authority. It's kind of like when I have my kids. I've got my two little boys, Matthew and Thomas. It's like I have the authority to decide what toys they get. And, you know, Matthew can't take from Thomas, say, well, no, you can't play with this. I've decided you can't. I would tell him, look, if Matthew said, but Dad, you took it away, why can't I take it away? I would say, no, I gave this to you. I have the authority. Just because I take it away doesn't mean you have that right. I'm the dad. So it's like for God, he gave us life. He lets us, he has the ultimate authority how much we have. Just because he can take human life does not mean that we can. Number two, and we're gonna be hopping on the hard break here soon. Numbers chapter 5, maybe we can put a bow on this when we come back. Numbers 5, I believe it does not refer to abortion. Read Numbers chapter 5, verses 11 through 31. It never mentions pregnancy. It never mentions the unborn child. Rather, it says if a woman is unfaithful, her thigh will swell up in the sense of becoming infertile, which makes sense because many acts of adultery do not result in pregnancy. So to me, I would say that the passage number 5 is talking about infertility, but we can put a ball on this when we come back.
If you're a pro-choice person, this hour's for you. All pro-choice callers today on Catholic Answers Live, Trent Horn, our guest.
Let us help you with your question today on Catholic Answers Live.
If you spend any time on Twitter, Facebook, or mainstream media, you're probably familiar with the litany of slogans that skeptics employ to rescue you from the foolish belief that God exists. The constant onslaught seems to leave people with the idea that they have no alternative but to embrace atheism. How can a Christian respond? In One Less God Than You, John DeRosa breaks down 20 of the most common atheist challenges and shows you how to craft effective answers. Atheism is more aggressive and widespread than ever. Read One Less God Than You and prepare yourself to respond with the joyful truth that God is real. To get your copy of One Less God Than You, visit shop.catholic.com today or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Did you know you can access Catholic Answers Live right from your phone or other mobile device? Download the Catholic Answers Live app today. The Catholic Answers Live app, available now on iOS and Android.
To many people, even many Christians, purgatory is a fantasy, or worse, a wicked lie invented by the church to make salvation complicated and keep people in fear. But I'm here to tell you that purgatory is fact, not fiction. The Bible supports it, Christians have historically believed in it, and it makes theological sense. In my new book, Purgatory is for Real, I provide the evidence and reasoning to help you understand this controversial doctrine and demonstrate how it's actually a joyful, hopeful reality, not something shadowy and mysterious, but a sign of God's love and mercy. To get your copy of Purgatory is for Real, visit shop.catholic.com today or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Dr. David Anders here. Where is purgatory in the Bible? Why confess my sins to a priest?
Find out more tomorrow at 2 p.m. Eastern on Call to Communion.
Now, back to Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. It's all pro-choice callers today. If you're a pro-choice caller, you are welcome. There's quite a few on the line, and we're going to try to get our best to get to you. And if you dial now, if you're a pro-choice person, we may well be able to get you on 888-318-7884. I think we probably will. I just want to wrap up with Kleber in Virginia, watching on YouTube. His point was, look, in the Old Testament, there's instances of abortion, and you were just pointing out that this example he gives is not an instance of abortion.
Right. So even if there were generic that God ends the lives of unborn children or born people, doesn't mean we have the right to do that. Only God is the author of human life. And this is one that comes up a lot. So I've seen it online a bunch in memes. People will cite Numbers chapter 5 to say, well, look, this was God instituted a procedure so that if a man suspected his wife of adultery, she would go to the temple, drink the dust from the floor of the tabernacle, floor of the temple. And if she did that, what they say is if she was unfaithful, she would end up miscarrying. And so what they say is God caused her to have a spontaneous abortion. So there's a divine abortion, they'll say. And so that shows abortion isn't wrong. Well, one, previous example, God can end human life, we can't. David, when he sinned against the Lord, God, as a punishment, allowed his infant child to die. That doesn't mean we can commit infanticide. But two, that's not what the text says in Numbers 5. It just doesn't say, and I'm really surprised this many people think, oh, well, Numbers 5 is clearly talking about abortion. To which I will ask, where does Numbers 5 talk about an unborn child? Because compare it to the book of Exodus, which talks about a pregnant woman getting involved in a fight between two men. The book of Exodus talks about her being injured and bringing a child forth. That's clearly talking about the death of an unborn child, or at least a pregnant woman. It's talking about a pregnant woman. Numbers 5 is not talking. It never mentions an unborn child. It never mentions a pregnant woman. I would say, if you think Numbers 5 means this, where does it say that? The key verses are Numbers 5, verses 27 through 28. It says, when he has made her drink the water, then, if she has defiled herself and has acted unfaithfully against her husband, the water that brings the curse shall enter into her and cause bitter pain, and her body shall swell and her thigh shall fall away, and the woman shall become an execration among her people, a curse, basically. But if the woman has not defiled herself and is clean, then she shall be free and shall conceive children. So clearly here, the contrast is the woman who has not committed adultery is able to conceive children. The woman who has committed adultery is not. She becomes infertile as a result of this divine punishment. So the major point and the minor point have to be made. But it's funny, Si, I find that a lot of people, when it comes to abortion, people accuse pro-life advocates of bringing religion into it. You're just bringing up religion. I find that people who bring up religion the most are pro-choice advocates.
Really?
Oh, absolutely. Whenever I and most other pro-life advocates who have engaged the issue, who have studied the issue, pro-life advocates who have studied the issue and want to engage others, they rarely bring up religion, those who have studied and engaged it. But many pro-choice advocates who have studied it and want to put forward an argument, they will bring up the Bible. They say, what about Numbers chapter 5? What about the breath of Adam? And so they'll bring up these religious examples. They'll say, well, we don't know who has a soul and who doesn't. I'll say, forget that. Let's talk about science. Let's talk about human rights. Let's talk about that instead.
Kleber, thank you very much for the call. I'm going to try to keep moving because I'm realizing we're getting near the top of the hour and the end of the show. And I want to make sure that we don't leave pro-choice folks waiting. They took the time to call. And we do appreciate that you take the time to call and share with us why you are pro-choice. So I go now to Mary in Ohio. Hello, Mary. Why are you pro-choice?
Hello. Yes. I am pro-choice because, well, I have a couple reasons. First of all, I believe that, well, it's funny that, you know, you guys just mentioned this way before I got on, but I think religion should not have any place in an abortion. So when you guys talked about how, you know, like people who are pro-choice often talk about, you know, religion coming into play more often than people who are pro-life, I kind of disagree with you there, but I do think that it's important to mention that not everyone practices the Christian faith.
Sure.
So that kind of, you know, the separation of church and state here is really important in my opinion.
Okay. Would you, I'll respond to that. And if you have other reasons, I'm happy to engage them. First, I would say that the pro-life argument is not an article that is exclusive to the Christian faith. I know many pro-life advocates who belong to other religions. I mentioned Ben Shapiro earlier in the show. He's an Orthodox Jew. He's not Christian. I know people who are not religious at all. There is an agnostic philosopher at the University of Kansas, Don Marquis, who is an agnostic, but he has a very powerful pro-life argument that other philosophers study. I think he passed away a few years ago, but Nat Hentoff of The Village Voice was a well-known liberal, secular individual who was opposed to abortion. So I would say that opposition to abortion is not, even though many Christians hold it, it's not an exclusively Christian belief that's imposed into the law. For example, 60, 70 years ago, you had the fight against segregation in the American South. And so you had people from the Southern Christian Leadership Conference and people like Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. who were opposed to racial segregation. And when you saw the marches that were done in Selma, the marches done across the South, you had Baptist ministers, Catholic priests, Jewish rabbis, Catholic nuns marching arm in arm against racial segregation. But here I would say just because all those people were religious, it didn't mean that the laws they wanted were an imposition of religion. And so what I would say, Mary, is what is wrong with a law that just says it should be illegal to directly kill innocent human beings? We know from science, unborn human fetuses and human embryos are human beings. Therefore, it should be illegal to kill these humans via abortion. That argument doesn't have any religion in it. So, you know, what would be wrong with it, I guess?
Sure. So I just think that, so say a woman is going to have a untimely pregnancy and she does not have, you know, any mental health stability to be a mother, and she does not have the, you know, wherewithal to mother a child, and that baby, you know, goes into a system, gets adopted, or goes through foster care, and is, you know, and has a horrible life. What if that baby has a horrible life and is not taken care of? And, you know, it's just like a cycle of horribleness that happens to this child because it was born, you know, and it didn't have a mother that was ready to take care of it. So, you know, my question is my thought process here is that until, you know, our country has a plan in place for these really struggling children to have a good life,
abortion should be legal.
Abortion should be withheld.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let me offer another perspective. I agree with you. Children who live in poverty or desperate situations is tragic, and it's something to mourn, and it's something to work against. But let me offer you another example. Let's suppose a child was born into a family that's well-adjusted. Mom's doing fine, dad's doing fine. But then let's see, the child's born, and then mom and dad have really rough things happen. Let's say the dad dies in a car accident, mom gets addicted to drugs, you know, she's depressed, and then the kid is, he ends up having a drug dependency problem or developmental problems even at the age of two. And, you know, no one's going to adopt a child with these kind of developmental issues. So the child's going to end up in group care, foster care. He's going to have a rough life. Should we just euthanize this two-year-old before he enters the system and has a rough life? What would you say in that situation?
Of course not. But that child has already been born into the world, and the mother decided to have that child.
Okay. So that's the issue then. To me, then, it's not about foster care or difficult life circumstances, because you and I agree we don't kill two-year-olds who are going to have a difficult life. For me, if the unborn child is as human as a two-year-old, we should treat them the same way we treat a two-year-old and help them, not hurt them. So I would say that the difference you brought up is, well, the two-year-old is born, he's in the world. I would object to that. I would say the unborn child is in the world. He is on planet Earth. He just can't be seen. To me, I don't see how moving down the birth canal changes whether a person has a right to life or not. Does that make sense?
That makes sense. That's where we differ in our beliefs, I suppose, because that's where I think that the woman has the right to decide whether, you know, she's going to continue with the pregnancy or she's not. And I also have a pretty interesting perspective about males and contraception, if you're willing to.
We have to come up on a third break, but if you could pitch it to me in 20 seconds, I'd be happy to entertain it.
Well, I have a strong suggestion that men should either get a vasectomy when they decide they want to become sexually active until they are ready to have a family. And the vasectomy is 99% of the time reversible, so it shouldn't be a problem for them to get that reversed. And or they could store some sperm and have that readily available when they are ready to have a child.
So Mary, are you proposing this as being a just parallel to outlawing abortion?
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't see the parallel, though.
I think that the fact that, well, yes, because a male is able to enter a woman.
And that is, you know, he has no other thing after that happens. He has no other obligation. If he doesn't want to be a father, he doesn't have to be. He could just pay child support or do whatever he wants. He could be on his merry way.
Okay, well, Mary, let me offer, well, I'm curious then. Would you just be in favor of a law that was gender neutral that said sexually active people have their reproductive organs deactivated until they're capable of bearing a child? So that would mean in your example, what's more parallel would not be abortion. It would be men have vasectomies and women have I forget the clinical name for it, but colloquially, tubal ligation. They would have, I got help from the peanut gallery there, that women would have a tubal ligation and men would have a vasectomy, because tubal ligations, I believe, can also be reversed, though I would dispute the effectiveness for both vasectomies and tubal ligations. That to me seems more parallel, not abortion. It'd be more like vasectomies, tubal ligations are the flip of the coin. And most pro-life advocates aren't arguing for forced tubal ligations. That to me seems, that would seem more parallel to me. But I would just say, no, we shouldn't be sterilizing anybody. We should just say people can be treated to be responsible with their bodies. But if they engage in an act that causes a new human being to come into existence, if they're a woman, they're obligated to not directly kill that human being. If they're a man, they're obligated to provide financial support for that mother and that unborn human being. Then we have gender equality in that example as well. So I hope that was helpful, and I'm grateful that you called in.
I guess we got to take a break. Let me just let you know this. We do have a free ebook available that I did not mention yet today. This month's free ebook is 20 Answers Prayer. If you'd like a book on prayer from two very, very fine priests, our own Father Hugh Barber and his confrere among the Norbertines, Father Sebastian Walsh, 20 Answers Prayer, available in the ebook format for free at shop.catholic.com. Shop.catholic.com.
Bringing you the truth. Catholic Answers Live.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects homebuyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
St. Paul's street evangelization isn't like other evangelism you might have seen on the streets. We don't yell, and we don't force anyone to pay attention to us. Instead, St. Paul's Street Evangelization is committed to presenting a positive, passionately Catholic presence to a world hungry for truth. For more information, or to start a chapter of your own, go to www.streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com. It's time to do our part.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
Once you lose faith, if somebody does something to you and hurts you one time, two time, three time, four time, St. Peter thought seven was a good number. How often should I forgive my brother, Lord? Seven times? My Lord said, no. 70 times, seven times a day.
For more information on Mother Angelica, visit Religious Catalog at EWTNRC.com.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. Trent Horn is our guest, and this entire day is for pro-choice people. If you are a pro-choice person, you are welcome to call 888-318-7884. Robert in Cincinnati, Ohio is next, I believe. Robert, are you there with us?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, Robert. Why are you pro-choice?
I haven't decided, but I wanted to bring up something. Mm-hmm. As I understand, pro-choice is a women's issue. Pregnancy is more a matter of self-defense for a woman in a physical way compared to the father's issue.
I don't understand. It's self-defense in the sense that...
What do you mean?
The woman is pregnant. Okay. Pro-choice would be something for the woman rather than the man to decide. Because it's self-defense in her case in a physical way.
Robert, self-defense would mean that someone is attacking or damaging my body, like someone's trying to cause me physical harm or kill me. But in pregnancy, while there are effects of pregnancy that are difficult to endure, pregnancy is a sign that a mother's body is proceeding in a very healthy way, and she's has a healthy relationship with her son or daughter in the womb. So her son or daughter is not attacking the mother. They're engaged. They are in the healthy relationship that they should have at that stage of the child's life. I just don't see how you can make a self-defense claim of morality here.
Double standard here because it's the woman who gets pregnant.
Right.
So I thought pro-choice meant it was up to the woman.
Well, some people do put it that way, but I would say...
Well, that's kind of what pro-choice means, is woman's choice. Like
right. Well, it's interesting, though. People will say pro-choice is about a woman or a person's right to control his body. Oh. Normally what they'll say is that it just applies to biological women, to women who become pregnant. And you're right, Robert. People will say, well, it's up to the woman to decide. But I would say that there are things that neither men nor women should be allowed to decide. And one of those is whether their children get to live or die. That just seems very clear to me. We have a mother has a responsibility to provide. Mothers and fathers have a moral obligation to provide their children with food, shelter, and safety. Mothers and fathers can both do this after birth. Only mothers can provide this physically before birth. And so they have an obligation to do that. I would just say, why should I not believe that? Why should I say that before birth, you don't have to care for your child, but after birth, you do? That just doesn't make sense to me.
Robert?
I don't think it's a man's issue, is it?
So you're just saying because I'm a man, I shouldn't have a say in it?
Saying that isn't this a woman's issue?
Well, it's a baby's issue too, wouldn't you? I mean, there's at least two people,
a baby. Robert, you're saying that it is women who decide whether to get abortions.
I think that's what pro-choice means.
Okay, well, Robert, what I will say is that just because a decision only lies with a certain group of people, it doesn't follow that group of people is always right. For example, it is a parent's decision to beat their child senseless or make him work in a coal mine. If you don't have a child, you won't make that decision. But parents should never make that decision to abuse their children. Just because they can do it, they have that power, doesn't mean that they should exercise it. So I would say that just because women are physically able to have abortions and are only the only ones who are physically able to do that, it doesn't mean morally or legally they should be allowed to do that. But I'm grateful you called in, and I hope we'll hear back from you in a future show.
888-318-7884, the number. We're just talking with pro-choice people today. Let's see. I think I'm going to Christine. Is that correct? Christine on Sacred Heart Radio. Christine.
I think we have a story here, Si.
Oh, we...
Yeah.
Oh, are you there? Oh, hi, Christine.
We have I think I have a bit of a testimony here, but it'd be nice to hear.
Yeah. So the deal was that I used to be pro-choice when I was a planned parent. Just baby. I was took birth control young, and mm-hmm. Abortion was always an option on the plate for me my entire life. My girlfriend had a daughter, and her daughter, got into some trouble and ended up going to prison. Mm-hmm. Before she went to prison, she was a heavy drug addict. Mm-hmm. All hooked up on heroin and meth and just major issues. Of course, then we find out she's pregnant. And I remember talking to her mom and just being like, wow, she should really, have an abortion because this kid's going to have a horrible life. Statistically, kids that are born in prison or whatever, they just end up being offenders themselves. The parents can't take care of them.
Right.
The child just going to be a hot mess, and on and on. So the child or the mother chose life. And she did end up having that child in prison. The baby was there for about, 2 years before they were, they had kind of like a mother-child area where the, moms who are inmates are able to raise their kids.
Oh, wow.
And so she was able to have her child there. And unfortunately, the mom still ended up kind of taking some negative paths in her life.
Yeah.
The child, on the other hand, once that baby was born and after the mom, got out of prison, she ended up reoffending and going back. Okay, so that part is still the negative.
Right.
But the child ended up, being raised by grandma, and everybody just loves that kid. And this kid now, you know, is like 9 years old. Know him very well myself. Is an amazing child and, you know, has just an amazing life. And so it completely changed my tune on what I used to think about, you know, that someone who is born in a situation like that could not possibly, you know, have a productive life and, you know, still be loved and have other people that would care for him. Another situation with that same mother had another child again, because again, she was, you know, still having issues, also went back to prison. Same situation, except this time the child was taken out of her custody right away.
Yeah.
Okay. That child was adopted by a family right away. And that child also has an extremely happy, loving family, you know, several brothers and sisters in this family. And so it just goes to show that not necessarily, you know, a person who's made bad choices or gets pregnant or has used drugs or has any of these other issues that are going on, that their offspring are necessarily going to be messed up people in society,
right?
Because these kids are actually just very loved. They're, you know, they got fruitful lives. They've got really good families that have supported them. There was a ton of services that were available for these kids, which I'm always hearing this argument that there's no services for kids. And these parents had, or the people that were raising these children after the fact, had tons of services that were available to them. You know, pregnancy resource centers with different donations.
Yeah, don't write them off. Thank you so much, Christine, for sharing that. Because it's unfortunate. People will bring up these examples, and they are tragic. But then they'll kind of, and even if these resources weren't available, abortion would still be wrong because it's wrong to kill innocent human beings. But it's important for people to know that, practically speaking, there are these resources, and many good, you know, we write off people as if biology is destiny, that, you know, how you were conceived is going to write the story for your whole life. And that's just not true, because the flip side, Cy, is that in many cases, people who experience severe adversity in life were actually part of an intended pregnancy. In many cases, people who experience the gravest hardships in life were products of an intended pregnancy, and then life takes a different turn for them. But we don't advocate for killing them when their life starts to go downhill. So, you know, it's interesting there that we tolerate that and we try to help them where they're at. For born people, we should do the same for unborn people.
Christine, I really appreciate that you took the time to
thank
call.
You.
Thank you.
It helps to lift our spirits.
God bless you guys.
You too. God bless you. I wish more women had called today. We only had two women to call, but that idea that you're solving a problem by killing a person is really a pernicious idea in our society. I remember a few years ago, I don't remember how long ago actually, but in Iceland, when they said we've had no more children with
Down syndrome, right,
and then. You're going to have to help me, but the famous lady from Hollywood, from Raymond, Everybody Loves Raymond.
Patricia Heaton.
Deborah! The wonderful Patricia Heaton.
Right.
She tweeted out, you don't solve a problem because what you did was you killed a lot of people. You didn't actually cure.
There's a difference between finding a solution and eliminating the problem, quote unquote. And of course, these children are not the
problem. The children are not the problem.
That would be like saying, you know, Cy, we live in California, which has record homelessness. I think something like 25 or 50% of all homeless people live here in the state of California. And if Governor Newsom just put them all on a boat and put it out to sea and sank it.
Send them all to Iceland.
It's just, well, it,
but that doesn't solve, well, that's not a solution. That's murder is what that is.
Right, but even, what's interesting, Cy, is that in some municipalities, they do put the homeless on buses to go to other cities, which I would say actually doesn't solve the problem. That moves it somewhere else, you know. But even still, it would be especially grievous to put them on a ship and sink it. You would say, oh, I got rid of homelessness. You didn't get rid of homelessness.
You got rid of the homeless.
You got rid of the homeless through an evil act, and we should not do the same thing with unborn children.
Right. You say, well, we can solve all these social problems if we just kill these people before they get out of mom.
Yeah, that's...
Well, that's... You're not solving
that
something.
The solution is morally
perverse. That's what we call
the
final solution.
The solution is worse than the problem to address.
Hey, tomorrow, if you really enjoyed Trent Horn today, he learned everything he knows from Tim Staples. I'm pretty sure that's true. And then we got 2 hours. So you get the real deal tomorrow. You get the student today. Get the professor tomorrow. Two hours.
Danielson, the student, he'll be here. He'll be catching flies with chopsticks.
It's fun having you back, Trent.
It's fun to be back.
All right, we'll see you tomorrow, God willing, for 2 hours of Open Forum with Tim Staples.
Amen.